I call to order the Committee on Human Services and Early Childhood, and we will ask for the first panel on Senate Bill 777, and we will open a public hearing on 777. Chair Gelser, please.
Great. Good afternoon, Chair Olson, members of the committee. For your record, my name is Sarah Gelser. I'm the state senator from Senate District 8, which is Corvallis, Philomath, Albany, and surrounding areas. We are here today to talk to you about a very lucky bill, Lucky Sevens, Senate Bill 777. Senate Bill 777 creates Oregon's ABLE Act. If we pass this bill, we will be the second state in the country to establish ABLE accounts. The state of Virginia saw their bill signed into law just last week. And what this bill will do is reverse a decades and decades of precedent of people with disabilities being unable to save money for essentials. This means that adults with disabilities that require disability-related supports are not able to save more than $2,000. That locks them out of being able to save for first and last month's rent, to be able to purchase a home, to be able to make costly repairs to wheelchairs, to buy things like dentures or eyeglasses that might not be covered by their insurance, and to do the things that we all want to do when we save money from our hard work, like go on a vacation or buy some new clothes, things that we just plan to do. In too many cases, it also limits the number of hours that people are able to work when they want to be productive working members of our communities. Current law also makes it very difficult for parents of children with disabilities to save for their kids' future. When my son was an infant, usually the first thing that you're told when you have a baby, set up a savings account, right? The first thing I was told is, whatever you do, don't save him any money. Don't save any money for that child, because when he's an adult, he will not be eligible for any services. That's always struck me as wrong, because as his parent, it's my job to take care of him and to prepare for his future. And it's also struck me as unfair that I invest my resources and provide for the future savings of my daughters, but that I treat my son in a different way. And we do that because of the law. However, last year, Congress passed a bill, and that bill included the ABLE Act. That will allow people with disabilities to accumulate assets in 529 savings plans up to $100,000 before it impacts their benefits. Although Congress passed this law, they said that each state that wants to allow their citizens to participate has to pass enabling legislation. So unless we make Senate Bill 777 law, Oregon families are unable to save. And you're going to hear from parents of children with disabilities today. You'll hear from adults with disabilities today about why it's so important for them to save. I've received dozens of letters about this bill, and I've heard from Michael Parker and the treasurer that their office has also heard from families all over the state that are concerned about saving for their children or saving for themselves. And I just wanted to share a couple of those quotes with you today from some of the emails that I received from people that aren't going to be able to speak to you. This is from a person named Carl. He says that Oregon needs to pass legislation to make the ABLE Act a reality for disabled persons. Being limited to $2,000 in savings does not allow them to be ready for a catastrophic event or enjoy a vacation like a standard person can. Another we heard from John in, doesn't say where John lives, but we heard from John, and this talks about a person that has a physical disability and autism. Mm-hmm. And in spite of this, the family was able to set her up with a townhouse. If you have a home, that does not count against your $2,000 asset limit. After they did that, they found out that under the terms of a special needs trust, which you can't use for housing, she's unable to use it for her property tax. The property tax on her townhouse is over $2,000 each year, but she is not able to save up that much, as having over $2,000 in assets would then make her no longer qualified for various benefits. Passing the ABLE Act would allow her to pay her property taxes and stay in the home that she wants to live in on her own. This is another woman named Elizabeth. Thank you for taking the time to read this. I'm the mother of a 33-year-old daughter with CP who receives federal benefits. The ABLE Act would allow her, like anyone else, to put aside some money each month into a 529 account to save for future needs not paid for by the government. $733 a month doesn't go far, but she would feel like she has the ability to pay for things that are important to her, like someday buying a vehicle with a lift or other things that are important to her. And then we heard from Corinne in Lake Oswego, and she talks about her adult son that has a dual diagnosis of mental illness and developmental disabilities. Unlike with my other adult children, I have had to restrain myself from encouraging our son to save, since saving any money from his Social Security benefits would endanger him losing it entirely. How absurd is that, since he needs to learn to manage money, yet saving anything beyond the decades-old limit of $2,000 would harm him in the long run. She goes on to explain how that impacts his health. Our son needs a medication that is not covered by the Oregon Health Plan, despite our appeals. Not getting the medication could have devastating results, including the loss of vision. She goes on to explain that they have to buy it from out of state, but in order to purchase the medication as his representative payee, I must carefully save his money so we can get the best possible rate by buying it quarterly, while also never exceeding that $2,000 monthly limit that will cause him to lose all of their benefits. People with disabilities have the same needs as people without disabilities. Savings is smart for everyone. It's a strategy we should open up to everyone. Senate Bill 777 is an exciting opportunity that we have to do that, to allow people to save money, become more independent, and make more of their own choices for their lives. And we've got a number of folks here today after this panel, and we're glad to answer questions after everyone's spoken.
Wait a minute, I get to say that.
Oh, sorry.
Treasurer Wheeler,
Chair Olson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ted Wheeler. I'm the treasurer for the state of Oregon. Senator Gelser did a great job of explaining the purpose of the ABLE Act, so I'll keep my remarks brief. First of all, I'm delighted to see the outpouring of support for this bill, and I'm pleased that the room is full of people who want to share their personal testimony. As Senator Gelser had indicated, over the last several months, we've heard from a number of Oregonians who've told us how they and their loved ones could benefit from a tax-advantaged ABLE savings account. And most importantly, what I've heard from a financial perspective is this kind of an account can go a long way towards helping people defray the considerable costs of living with disabilities. And over the course of a lifetime, an account like this could be a profoundly powerful and helpful tool for so many Oregonians who really need a lifeline at this particular point. I want to take just a moment, since she's not going to do it for herself, to thank Senator Gelser for her leadership on this important issue. This is just another example where she has really stepped forward to help unserved and underserved populations in this state, and I am very pleased with her championing this bill, and I'm proud to be here today to help support her in those efforts. The Treasury staff and I have been following the federal legislation associated with ABLE for a number of years. And I just want to point out, the reality is that Congress has not been able to get much done of late. So here's an example where Republicans and Democrats came together at the end of the last Congress, and they passed the ABLE account. They did it because they knew it was something that could help people all across the country, and they did it because they knew that states like Oregon would then set up the legislation to specifically create the ABLE program. I committed at the time that that legislation passed to Senator Gelser that I and the Treasury would stand ready to help support the program and develop it and operate it as best as we possibly could to make sure that it was successful for Oregonians. And I'm here today to reiterate that pledge to you on the record. We in the Treasury are ascribed with responsibility under Senate Bill 777 with setting up and operating the ABLE program here in the state of Oregon. As a first priority, what we're going to do is leverage our experience with the highly successful Oregon College Savings Program to help guide us in terms of how we actually set up that program. I have from the Treasury Michael Parker to my left. He's also the director of the Oregon College Savings Network. He's going to talk a little bit about what the Treasury is going to do to help establish the ABLE program. I hope you'll join Senator Gelser and me in supporting what I think is a piece of legislation that, with the benefit of years of hindsight, will prove to have been one of the single most significant things that this legislature has been able to accomplish, assuming you pass this bill. Thank you very much for your support of Senate Bill 777.
Thank you, Chair Olson. For the record, Michael Parker, Executive Director of the Oregon 529 College Savings Network. As Treasurer Wheeler mentioned, we've had a very successful program established for the College Savings Plan here in the state. We've been operating the 529 program since 2001, and we've accumulated a little bit of north of $2.3 billion in the plan. So we really have a really good handle on what we're going to need to do to set up the ABLE program. The great thing about the network is we have a lot of folks around the country who are looking at the same thing. I can leverage a lot of folks around the country about what they're doing to set up their plans, and we really think this is a natural progression from college savings then on to ABLE savings. As again, as Senator Gelser mentioned and Treasurer Wheeler, they have the same needs. Disabled folks have the same needs as normal developing children have as well. So we have the contracts in place. We have a lot of the administrators in place to hopefully hit the ground running when and if the legislature sees fit to pass this legislation. And so I'm happy to answer questions about the technical pieces of this, but just know that the College Savings Plan is ready to go to put this implement this law as soon as and if it becomes law. On a personal note, as I mentioned earlier today, I kind of stand with two hats. I hope to get to administer this program, but I also think I'm going to be an investor in the plan because I have an autistic daughter, so I kind of come at it with two angles, but it would be great for me to kind of be able to be involved with it on the setting up end and then actually be an investor in the program. So again, happy to answer questions, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair. My name is Cedric Hayden. I'm State Representative from House District 7. I also sit on the House Healthcare Committee as Vice Chair. I was interested in this legislation and have been tracking it several years in Congress. It was originally introduced in 2006. For whatever reasons, it took about 8 years to work through that process. I'm encouraged to see that process has taken place, and I wouldn't want to see Oregon delay, you know, any amount of time. I think we have the opportunity. The name of the ABLE count is Achieving a Better Life Experience Act. That's important because the name of the account really explains what we're trying to accomplish here. We have the opportunity in Oregon to get this in place and available to people that can participate in it by the end of the year. My other hat is a healthcare provider. I've spent the last 20 years of my life dedicated in part to providing health services to the disabled in a hospital setting. Whether you're under the Oregon Health Plan or whether you're under private insurance, there are many benefits in our health arena that are not covered, particularly for people with disabilities. Under the current system, people that need to access the Social Security benefit for their children or for their adult disabled are unable to do so if that person saves more than $2,000. Many of our medical costs are much more than $2,000, and so parents would have to hold those monies away from the disabled person in order for them not to lose their Social Security benefit. Under this law, they will be able to save $100,000 of income, whether they're working, collecting a W-2 wage, save that up for things that they need for a better life experience. So it's certainly not limited to health care. I think it's a very important aspect for us to address. I'm pleased that the Treasurer and that the State of Oregon is getting behind this and that the rules that will be adopted will allow for us to take advantage of $14,000 of federal tax deduction to contribute to that, whether that's a grandparent or a parent or just an interested party doing that. And so these funds can build up to $100,000 and they can still take access to the benefits that they have. In addition to that, if they are in a position that they can have more funds set aside or the parents don't feel like they need to use the Social Security benefits, they can save up to $310,000 over time to really make an impact for their dependents' life. So I find it's a very important bill. I support the bill. I hope that it can move forward forward because I'm aware of the unique challenges, whether that's independence, financial, or medical challenges. I also am a parent of a special needs child, and so this bill is personal to me and my wife. So I'd ask for your support.
And I just wanted to finish by thanking Representative Hayden for his vocal support of the bill and to really acknowledge the work that Michael Parker and the treasurer have put into getting this bill ready and in good form. I was sitting at home the night that the president signed this bill into law, was kind of excited about it, following the Twitter feed, and the phone rang within moments of the president putting his hand on the bill, and it was our good treasurer saying, the ABLE Act just signed, let's get it done. And it was really encouraging to me to see that commitment and the expertise and follow through of Michael and his staff is the reason why we've got this bill in front of you today. So thank you.
Are there any questions? Senator Mona Sanders? Senator Cruz? I have one before you get away. It does have a fiscal on it, and the fiscal is substantial. Is the money coming from the general fund, or is it going to come from the 529 college fund and repaid to the 529 college fund?
Chair Olson, again, Michael Parker, for the record. The money will not come from the general fund. How we've structured the fiscal is the 529 network essentially is going to loan itself the startup dollars, the $890,000 startup dollars. And then how it's contemplated is as the ABLE Act goes through the years and has assets and folks coming in, the revenues that ABLE Act will generate will end up supporting itself much in the same way that the 529 plan has done over time. So instead of asking you for general fund dollars or even a general fund loan, we have the resources now in our ending fund balance to borrow from ourselves, end up paying it back. By that time, ABLE should be able to support itself going forward in the future biennia.
Well, I don't need to say fellow because I'm the chair, right? At what point in time in history do you think that this will become self-sufficient?
Chair Olson, that is a great question. We hope very soon. It took about 4 to 5 years for the 529 College Savings Plan to become fully self-supporting and pay back that general fund loan that you generously gave to us. I would love to put a date on it for you. I just don't know. My sense is we're going to, again, hit the ground running. The fiscal allows us to hire two positions that are basically going to focus their entire time on getting the word out and educating folks about what ABLE can do for their families. So we're going to work really hard to get assets and get folks into the plan. But I imagine it would take several biennia for it to really kick in and really be supporting itself.
How do you anticipate an advertising campaign to get the word out in the broadest and the quickest manner?
Chair Olson, actually, I've already engaged my current creative team on that question just when this whole thing came up, and part of what we're really going to do is hiring the person that's going to focus it an outreach effort on ABLE. So the person's going to be more of the marketing of this, the position. I can't sit here and tell you what we're going to do as far as mass media advertising. My sense is we might not do as much as we do on the 529 plan because I think that the constituency here is different. We really want to make sure we're educating families and not just, you know, putting out a concept. So having these two people come on board for us and doing it on an ongoing basis, I think will be much more helpful than just trying to get out a basic message about what this is.
But do you have a plan for outreach? Can you get out to various institutions or whatever? Do you have a plan for that?
Mr. Chair, I am confident that there will be a professional plan. I believe the advocacy organizations, the family networks in the state are extremely interested in this. If the number of people that have proactively contacted my office and the state treasurer's office is any indication, we aren't going to have to go out and ask people to sign up. People are not walking. They are running and banging down the doors saying, please let us save for our future so that we can build a better life, like Representative Hayden said.
And as long as you're speaking, would you give us the changes that the -1 amendment makes to the original bill?
Certainly. I do not have it right in front of me, but the Dash 1 amendment clarifies that it is in the 529 plan rather than in the Treasurer's Office specifically. It changes the title of the Oregon 529 College Savings Network to the Oregon 529 Savings Network. It adds a person that is involved with disabilities onto that board. So right now, it has an administrator that has a lot of personal knowledge of this issue. That may not always be the case, so we want to make sure that the board is in that way. And there are other changes in the language to ensure that the 529 plan has the capacity to be as flexible as possible. We're still waiting for the federal government to release its rules and regulations. We want to make sure that the citizens of Oregon are able to invest as much as they can in as many ways as they can that the federal government allows. The last thing is that the initial draft of the bill did not include the state level benefits. Right now, you parents in Oregon that invest in an Oregon 529 college savings plan for their children receive an Oregon state tax benefit. We believe that that our Oregon tax credits should be equally applied to disabled and non-disabled children. So if you have three children and you're investing in a college savings plan for your two non-disabled children and an ABLE plan for your child with autism, you should have the same tax incentives for all three of them because those kids should be treated equally under our tax code, and that's in the Dash 1.
You had mentioned the name of it as the 529 Savings Plan. Wouldn't it be better? I would just make the suggestion that you amend it to the 529 ABLE Savings Plan to really delineate it and say that this is... rather than just a savings plan?
So, Senator Olson and members of the committee, the network, the 529 Savings Network, is broader. So that network will administer both the ABLE accounts and the college savings accounts. I believe that the ABLE accounts will be called the 529
ABLE
accounts.
They will.
Oh, they will.
They will.
Okay. Excellent. Very good. Are there any other questions? I want to keep asking because I want to keep this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next are Joey Rosano, Jeff Kruger, and Gary Sinsick. I hope I got those right, and if I didn't, I'm sorry.
Close
is only with hand grenades. Yeah, absolutely. That's right. It's actually a gavel to buster.
Oh, now you're the chair now?
It's your... Pardon?
Now she's the chair, or are you the... Which one's the chair now?
Let's let him be the chair. It's my bill. He should chair.
She doesn't want to give it up. Please start, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Olson and members of the committee. My name is Joey Rosano, and this is my lovely daughter, Jade, who experiences Rett syndrome. Rett syndrome is like having a child with cerebral palsy, epilepsy, autism, Parkinson's disease, and an anxiety disorder all in one. So clearly it's very involved. She has a brother and sister and two working parents. Initially, we believed that she would catch up with her peers and have a future similar to her siblings. So part of that future included college. So we set up a 529 educational plan for her, just like her brother and sister. Then she started showing developmental delays around age two and was eventually diagnosed with Rett syndrome, which clearly put her on a different path. We consulted a lawyer and talked with other families experiencing this disability, and they suggested we set up a special needs trust, which we did consult about. It was extremely complex and expensive, and it was not an option for our family. We did put it on our will, because that was the only way that we could fund it. However, the lawyer did help us specifically to write her out of our will to make sure that if anything happened to us, she would at least be able to receive federal assistance when she turned 18. I have to tell you that writing your six-year-old out of your will was the most difficult moment of one of the most difficult moments of my life. And I think as a parent, it's my responsibility to take care of my children and provide as bright a future as I can. And here I was doing exactly the opposite of that by writing her out of my will. I felt punished for having a child with a disability, and I felt like it was so unfair that I could save for her brother and her sister, but not for her just because she had a disability. I have to tell you, this ABLE Act, it is truly a game changer. Not only will families, they won't have to make the hard decisions that I've already made. Maybe I'll even change my mind. If this passes, I will put her back in my will. gladly. But instead, families can have ABLE accounts to support their children with disabilities. They can go to school. They can get a job. They can get their own apartment. They can get wheels, transportation. These are the really basic things that allow people to be part of their community. Jade wants to grow up and live in her own apartment, just like her friends and siblings. We think having her own apartment is a milestone in every person's life. It's how many of us discovered our own voice and built our own community and support system. And if she wants that, now I will be able to help her get that too. The ABLE Act would allow us to save for a condo or apartment so that when she moves out, she can have a personal care staff and her own place where she can set her own schedule and build her own life and friendships. I mean, really, who wants to live with mom for the rest of her life? With the ABLE Act, we can help Jade save for important real-life expenses so she can have the life that she wants and she deserves. If there's anything I know about my daughter, she may not have an actual voice, but she does deserve a choice. The ABLE Act and the Senate Bill 777 will truly improve the lives of Oregonians with disabilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir.
Chair Olson, Chair Gelser, my name is Jeff Kruger. I'm from Portland. I'm here today to testify on behalf of my daughter, Karina, in support of the passage of Senate Bill 777 as well. I'm the father of two children, Mike, who is a second grader, and a daughter, Karina, who's in kindergarten. Mike doesn't have disabilities. Karina does. She also actually has the same disorder as Jade. She has Rett syndrome. She faces severe physical challenges, significant communication challenges, and her life path is going to be very different than our son's life path. One of the things we quickly realized after our daughter received her diagnosis, and it's a common thing for this actually to be discovered when a child is about 2 to 3 years old, was that we'd already started saving for our son's college education in the Oregon College Savings Plan. We can save for his future, for his college education on a tax advantage basis, but we can't save under the current law for our daughter's disability-related needs and expenses, which are going to be obviously different than Mike's on a tax advantage basis. So I think it's been said by a number of the people already who have testified today that this is really an issue of fundamental fairness, that the federal law that was passed is putting an opportunity before the states to put disabled persons and their families on equal footing, or at least not put them behind other families in saving for their children's futures. It's really an opportunity, as I see it, for my family to save for the needs that our daughter has and to empower us to help decide what needs she has and how they need to be satisfied. So we don't have to necessarily rely upon the government for everything that she needs, because there are obviously a number of things that she needs that aren't covered by various different governmental services. So it puts the focus on the family and empowers us to do these things for her. It's going to take burdens off of other family members, and I'll give you a couple examples about activities that Karina is involved in that really this will help. One, like many children, she's 5 years old, she loves to swim, and in fact she has very involved grandparents in her life who take her to the swimming pool once a week, and they go swimming. They're 70 and soon to be 71 years old. Right now, they're able to get our daughter in and out of the vehicle, but as they age, they're not going to be able to do that. We're going to need to make a modification to the van that we have, and we've already received estimates that the van modifications will be north of $10,000. An Oregon ABLE account will allow us and our family to start saving for the need to make those modifications so that she can continue to have these great life experiences with her family and the community. Without transportation, she's not going to be part of society, and this is an extremely important feature that is in the ABLE Act, that the types of disability-related expenses that people can use the account for are much broader than you could imagine for purposes of the college savings account. The last point was she was in preschool in the same elementary school as our son, but she obviously doesn't participate without supports and assistance. The ABLE account could be used for those sorts of supplemental needs that she doesn't get through the school district, like physical therapy, additional speech therapy, or support services from a paraeducator. This will allow us to help supplement the services that she does get from the government now. So I'd encourage you to pass the ABLE Act.
Thank you. Sir.
Chair Gelser, Chair Olson, members of the committee. My name is Gary Sinsick. My daughter Neva just turned 13. She's a middle schooler at Trillium Public Charter School in Portland. Neva's like a lot of girls her age. She likes music and dancing and sports and pizza and hanging out with her friends. There's a lot of ways that she's different as well. Neva has a rare genetic syndrome called Moat-Wilson syndrome. Among other things, this has resulted in global developmental delays, and she needs assistance in pretty much all aspects of daily life, toileting, eating, dressing, bathing, sleeping sometimes. She got me up at 1 o'clock this morning. That's when we started our day. She needs assistance to keep her safe and an augmentative communication system to help her communicate with others. As you might imagine, there's a lot of challenges raising a kid like Neva. Some of those challenges, of course, are related to her disability. Unfortunately, other challenges are related to the systems that have been put in place to help her in her well-being. For example, as we've been discussing, in order to retain her qualification for SSI and Medicaid, she can only have a maximum of $2,000 in personal assets. So what that means for parents of kids like Neva is that we must intentionally and vigilantly impoverish our own children. It's very sad when Neva's grandparents and aunts and uncles want to give her a savings bond or open an account for her, and we have to tell them no. That could potentially jeopardize her future. That's really hard for them to understand, and it's really heartbreaking. For parents of typically developing kids, they're well acquainted with the challenges of saving for college. But imagine if your college savings account could only hold $2,000. And now imagine that it wasn't just for college, but it was to help support your child for basic expenditures throughout their entire life. That's the kind of situation up to now that we faced with our daughter. Prior to the passage of the ABLE Act, the only way to accumulate more than $2,000 in assets was through a special needs trust. But those can be complex to administer and costly to set up and maintain. And one wrong move, and again, your child's entire future could be at risk. What we want for Neva is what all parents want for their kids: a good place to live, a suitable job, educational opportunities, and a healthy and meaningful life. The implementation of the ABLE Act in Oregon means that we can invest in our daughter's future in a simple and sensible way. And I urge you to pass SB 777.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel? None? Thank you very much. The next panel, please, would be Justin Connolly, Karen Wandall, and Rachel Simpson. Why don't we start with Rachel?
Hi.
She's been here before.
I'm Rachel Simpson. Now you get to see the other side of me and what my parents struggle to give me on a regular basis. The ABLE Act would give me money. The ABLE Act would give me a chance to save up money for college. I really want to go to college to better my career in what I do now. But I can't do that because I don't have enough money to go to college. And I have a loving mother and father that were willing to pay for my wheelchair last time, that was able to stand up and rotate backwards and stand up. But as you can see, I'm in a loaner chair right now, and the insurance has said to me, because my legs don't work, they aren't going to pay for the wheelchair to stand up. I have had other funding sources to make that wish come true. Also, I need help with house and living expenses. I have a lift that gets me in and out of the bathtub, but if that breaks, I'm done for. And lastly, I would like to thank you on behalf of the Oregon Council and Developmental Disabilities on the Fairview Trust for passing in that way. That will really help me get my own housing eventually. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Whoever would like to go next.
Hi, my name is Justin Connolly, and I am from Corvallis, Oregon. I am a member of the Oregon Self-Advocacy Coalition. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 777. It is important to me to save extra funding for housing and transportation costs. I live independently on my own in my own apartment. I have lived independently since 1998. I have not been able to live in a nice house or own my own home. Instead, I've lived in worn-down homes that are unsafe. Many of those homes are not accessible, nor do they meet my needs. I want something that meets my needs and that is affordable and livable. My dream is to save money to make a deposit to move into a place that meets my needs. If the ABLE Act passed, I would be able to save enough to meet my housing needs and live independently. Thank you for your time. Now, I will be supporting Karen in her testimony by asking her questions. Karen, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, I will. My name is Karen Londahl. I live in North and Northeast Portland. I work for my Senator Chip here at the Capitol. And
okay. What is it important for you to save money?
It's important to me to save money because I'm on my own. I want to save money so it can be in the bank, so I can have savings in the bank where it should be.
How does saving money help you live independently?
It makes me independent because sometimes my family won't be around, and I don't want to rely on my siblings to help me anymore.
How could saving money help you pay for health care costs?
It would help me to pay for my dental insurance, for my going to my doctors, and for eyeglasses, because I have a glaucoma in my eyes where I see things, floaters, and it would help me to, in case if I have to have laser surgery, it would help me very much.
Why should people with disabilities be able to save money?
Because why I think it's really important, because why we are independent and we live in Oregon where all disabilities should be like other human beings in like anybody in the Portland area who's living like any normal people.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you for to listening to our concerns.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for this panel?
I have a question. Justin, can you tell us where you work?
I work for Hendrickson Services in Corvallis, and I'm only working basically an hour and a half each day, 5 days a week, an hour and a half. And I don't feel like I'm getting anything met. And that doesn't really cover the money I need. Right. So it's like, I don't know what, I'm at a loss of words with all that.
Thank you. And Rachel, are you working right now?
I am. Unfortunately, I'm only able to work 4 hours a day, sometimes more, sometimes less. But again, my mom had to pay out of pocket to be able to make that happen. Because of the restroom issues I have a lift that you guys don't see on a regular, typical basis that I carry around with me. And my mom had to pay for the first one all by herself. And for me to be able to save, it would release a burden off my parents because they're getting older and I can't rely on them all the time.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. Next panel would be Shauna Brownstein, Shane Jackson, and Joey Tangney. I got that one right. I probably blew that one. And is this the last one?
Yes.
That was John Tangney.
John Tangney, yes.
I think we'll just ask if there's anybody else
there. Yeah.
We can answer this a lot faster.
Thank you. Would you like to go ahead and start?
Sure. Yeah. My name is Shauna Brownstein. I want to thank all of you for having me. As my day job, I work in government affairs for Northwest Natural, but I'm here today to talk about my beautiful 3-year-old son, Wynn. Wynn suffers from a constellation of health issues that are nobody's fault. He was just born that way. It just happened. So at 3 years old, he's a smart little guy, but he doesn't walk or talk, and he receives all of his nutrition through a feeding tube, which he's attached to all day long. He signs a little bit to communicate, and we work with myriad therapists to help him explore his world as independently as possible. And I think the key word for I think all parents with children who have disabilities and special needs is independent. Truly, my greatest hope is that as Wynn gets older, he can live an independent life. But if that's my greatest hope, my greatest fear is that he's going to continue to depend on others for the rest of his life. And that's the most likely scenario. Being able to save for Wynn's continued therapies, transportation, housing, adaptive equipment, and education would limit his dependence on others and help him live as independently as possible. I don't know if he'll have a job, but if he does, I want him to be empowered to save money. And when everything else is so hard for him, an ABLE account would help make this one part of life just a little bit easier. the current system is it has this perverse incentive of basically guaranteeing dependence, which is bizarre to me. And just in closing, thinking about the future is an exercise I generally try to avoid. It's incredibly painful for me and hard. I don't know what he's going to be capable of doing, how much care he'll need. An ABLE account would help us as a family plan for the future, a future where at some point we're not going to be able to care for him anymore. And I think just in closing, the ABLE Act can help families like mine feel a little more certain about the future. So thank you. I encourage you to pass SB 777.
Thank you. Sir?
My name is Shane Jackson. I'm the lobbyist for the Autism Society of Oregon. I'm here today to endorse this bill on behalf of the Autism Society of Oregon. This is very exciting. We'd like to thank Chair Gelser for championing this, and want to especially call out Chair Treasurer Wheeler and his staff for also working very diligently on this issue. The ABLE Act on a federal level was strongly supported by the autism community, specifically with the national organization Autism Speaks, who I used to represent in this building. And I still keep in touch with them because I was had the opportunity of lobbying for them when I was in D.C. For a conference. And this is one of the things that we were working on in Washington, D.C., was making sure this bill was passed. It was a touch-and-go thing. Just to bring you up to date, so far, this legislation, the sister legislation of this bill, has been passed in five other states: Louisiana, Massachusetts, Utah, Virginia, and West Virginia. Three other states have also passed the legislation and currently pending signature of the governor: Arkansas, Kansas, and North Dakota. 27 other states, including Oregon, are in the legislative process. I think we should join the five other states and pass this bill as soon as we can. You've heard a lot from other people. This directly affects the autism community, and to quote Representative Greenlink, we are facing a tsunami of autism in the state, and by passing this bill right now, we're getting ourselves way ahead of the problem, and I really appreciate it. Thank you, Chair Olson and Senator Gelser. Thank you.
Sir.
Hi, my name is John Tangney, and I'm from Happy Valley, Oregon. Mine was quoted by Senator Gelser as the second letter she read from. basically, actually, here I feel fairly fortunate in that I came, you know, nothing, but I've had a good job most of my life until about 2 weeks ago when my job disappeared, but I was ready for retirement anyway, so it was okay. And we put away about 6 years ago, we've been involved with a nonprofit group looking to try to find land, build housing for people with developmental disabilities, because my daughter has both autism and a genetic disorder called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which when I try to explain it to people, it's basically like all the ligaments that hold your bones into their joints. Imagine they turn to limp rubber bands and bones kind of pop out of joints all over your body frequently. So she's at physical therapy at least once, if not twice a week, putting bones back in joint and working on strengthening joints, etc. But she is able to get around. We were able to purchase a townhouse for her 6 years ago, and we thought we were all set. We were setting that up. We set up a special needs trust so that when we die, that gets funded. And then we talked to the trust company and find out that they're saying, oh, well, you realize we're going to have to charge her market rate rents on her own house when we pass away, and that she can't save money for the property tax, and yet the special needs trust could not pay the property tax. And that's actually going back and forth. It's a gray area, and we're still trying to, you know, that's a big nervous thing. Plus, she can't save money on her own for things that she'd like to do for fun, which mainly her fun is either watching baseball or basketball on TV and going out with providers for brokerage services. But other than that, you know, that's it. Her whole life, we wish she had more of a social life, but we're trying. The ABLE Act could help provide for her to do some of these other things. It would help answer the gray area of what happens if suddenly they decide after we're gone, oh, sorry, you're going to have to pay rent. You're going to have to pay the property tax somehow, mysteriously, and the special needs trust can't do that. And it's like, even though we plan to try to do everything right, it still could all backfire. So the ABLE Act is something that would help very much in that regard. And I would like to ask that as you finalize all the details with the Treasury Department, something, consider how money at our death could help go into an ABLE account, how, or potentially even an annual funding from a special needs trust into an ABLE account. That because there's nothing, it's a big question mark right now how any of that might be able to happen. So the as far as you were talking about getting the word out, I assure you we had a meeting we went to at our brokerage, anything International Northwest, but it's INF, and INW, excuse me, and Larry Deal, the manager there, we had long-term planning. How does everything go after we're death? And we mentioned the ABLE Act, and he's very, you know, the brokerages are very aware of it, and brokerages like his, this passes, they'll put on seminars, programs, and get the word out as much as they can about this. So that's one of the ways that this will get publicized and pushed. All right.
Good. Thank you very much. Are there any questions for this panel? And last but not least, we have, I believe it's, is it Helena Siegfried? Helene Siegfried, I'm sorry. And is there anyone else that would like to testify on this bill? It's lucky sevens.
Thank you. Parent from the school I taught at. Small world.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Olson, Senator Gelser, and the committee. My name is Helene Siegfried. I am a parent with three disabled kids. I have a 32-year-old paraplegic transgender daughter and a 24-year-old triplegic son. My two older children were involved in an automobile accident with a drunk driver. And my youngest son is 18, and he is on the autism spectrum. And so I'm going to talk a little bit more about what it has been like to be a widow for over 15 years, raising three kids with disabilities, trying to provide them with as many supports as they could have to succeed into their lives the best that they could. One of the challenges that I'm going to really focus on is my son with autism, because he is going to need the longest help for the rest of his life. But I put him into private speech and language therapy, and my insurance, being an educator, was good insurance, but it only covered it for a short period of time, and then at that point they said that he should be cured. So out of the 9 years that he was in private speech and language therapy, he only had 4 years that were covered. I also had him do sensory integration therapy, occupational therapy, and also the same. He was covered for a short period of time, and then from that point out, I paid for it on my own. And other therapies along the way, from swimming to horseback riding. And I think as a parent, no matter who your children are, typical or special needs, you just want what is best for them. And I think that today I came in knowing a lot and having read a lot about the ABLE account, but about SB 777, but it's giving me even more open eyes about what really happens to special needs kids when they're not living at home with their families, when their families are no longer able to take care of them, and are they deemed to a life of being poor and not having the joys of life that maybe their typical cousins or other people in life do. So I just appreciate that you're looking at this bill. I feel very strongly about the bill. I think that there will be so many people in Oregon that can benefit from this, and that the earlier that you can start putting money into a tax-free account, you can use it for therapies instead of trying to pull it out of your monthly budget, and then later on, of course, in life. So I thank you very much for your time, and that's it.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 777, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 777.
Most Honorable Chair Olson, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 777. Those are dated March 9th, 2015.
Senate, the most honorable Senator Michael Denbrough moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 777, dated 3-9-2015. Is there any discussion?
It's getting a little deep in here, brother.
If there's no discussion, is there any objections? And if there are not any objections, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Olson. I move Senate Bill 777 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue by prior reference, and then be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Denbrough has moved that Senate Bill 777 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue by prior reference, and then be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
I wanted to. Oh, go ahead.
Please.
No, I'm just going to thank the former chair, Gelser, for bringing this to us, and that, you know, I'm proud that Oregon is, you know, has taken the first opportunity to act on this and create a program that will benefit so many people.
I was just going to say that the new chair of this committee is moving things a lot quicker than the old chair did.
I'd like to thank everyone that came forward to testify. I'd like to thank Senator Gelser for her due diligence in bringing this bill forward, because it will help Oregonians. It's really wonderful. And I'd like to ask her if she would mind if I would be a co-chief sponsor.
You are welcome to be a co-chief sponsor.
Because this is an amazing bill, and I'm glad it's moving forward. Is there any other discussion?
I would suggest, Senator Gelser, that as the bill's moving, you get a sign-up sheet and
send it out to everybody?
I think that would be a really good idea.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, I learned something in this process, so I just wanted to thank the adults with disabilities who have stepped up and told stories and wrote letters. As this bill worked through Congress, the conversation was always about parents and the ability for parents to save for their children. And what I really had not thought about is, as an adult, what would that be like to not be allowed to save money, to take the money that I earned and be able to save, or have to limit the number of hours that I worked because I would have too much money. So thank you all for standing up and reminding us that issues around disabilities are about people with disabilities, and peripherally about parents of people with disabilities. And you've taught me a lot. And so it's about kids, but it's also about adults. So for the three of you, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Mona Sanders? May be
different. Just excited.
Very good. Thank you. If there is no further discussion, I would like to have the clerk call the roll, please.
Senator Denbrough?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
Aye.
Senator Mona Sanders?
Aye.
Chair Olson?
Yes. Yes. Yes on both accounts.
Hi.
The gap.
Oh yeah. Motion passes. Thank Chair.
Motion well, passes. I know. I was waiting for her to finish the motion.
Say the motion passes.
The motion passes.
We are adjourned. No.
No. Thank you. You're a good chair. And I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 777. And let's pause for a second, because I think there are people that are leaving the room. And that way we can you're welcome to stay, but I know there's folks that are coming, and that way they can focus while they're talking, too. Thank you all very much for doing that.
What a gorgeous little girl. She had to be the poster child.
She has been.
She's just
so cute.
Oh, shit. On this next one, you don't have to do a sign-up sheet. We're already there.
We're all already there. So if we get the sign-up sheet, you'll take it to your caucus?
Still on the record.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's bring it. Oh, this is the address.
Oh, let's recess briefly.
Great.
All right, we will come back to order, and I am going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 700. And So I know there's a lot of people here. I just want to apologize in advance. I have to leave early to catch a flight. And so Senator Olson, as we know, is very good chair. So I'm going to pass it over to him partway through. But it's not because it's something someone said. Cheyenne, do you want to tell us about Senate Bill 700?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 700 appropriates general fund dollars to the Oregon Health Authority to assist senior farm direct nutrition program recipients and women, infants, and children farm direct nutrition program recipients with a purchase of fresh local foods. It declares an emergency as effective July 1st, 2015, and it has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. So, Callie and... And Patty, are you coming up with her?
I think the Mr. and Mrs. Unger.
Mr. and Mrs. Unger. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks. We've met some other people named Unger.
Okay. Ben, maybe?
Ben, Melissa.
We just saw her down the cafeteria.
Nieces and nephews.
Welcome. Kelly.
Sure, I'm happy to start. I'm Chair Gelser, Chair Olson, and members of the committee. Thanks for having me and giving me the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 700 today. For the record, my name is Callie McDermott. I'm the legislative assistant to Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, who represents District 21, which is lots of inner southeast Portland, lots of Milwaukee, and Oak Grove, Oregon, little bitty piece of inner northeast Portland. The senator is also a member of the Oregon Hunger Task Force, whose mission is to address the root causes of hunger in Oregon. And I often represent my boss at task force meetings and events. And since she's chairing the Rules Committee right now, she asked me to testify on her behalf. This is a good bill that aims to expand and improve access to fresh fruits and vegetables for low-income seniors, women, and children in Oregon. Senate Bill 700 provides assistance and incentives to low-income seniors, women, and children to purchase fresh, unprocessed, locally grown fruits, vegetables, and herbs from farmers markets or roadside stands for themselves and their families. This will provide additional funds for WIC and Senior Farm Direct, as well as set aside money to explore additional fruit and vegetable match opportunities, helping seniors, women, and children, and farmers to thrive. This is a win-win investment in the health of Oregonians. Senator Rosenbaum just wanted to mention that she appreciates the hard work that's gone into crafting these bills. Patty Whitney-Wise, Partners for Hunger Free Oregon, and a lot of the advocates on the task force have worked really hard, and they're very dedicated. We appreciate their continued advocacy on these important issues. Chairs Gelser and Olson and members of the committee, on behalf of Senator Rosenbaum, I urge you to support Senate Bill 700. Oregon's low-income seniors, women, and children deserve affordable access to fresh fruits and vegetables. My boss began her time on the Oregon Hunger Task Force over 10 years ago, and she recognizes that we've made significant progress in feeding our vulnerable and our hungry, but there's still work to do, and that's why Senator Rosenbaum is a proud chief sponsor of Senate Bill 700. Our office looks forward to working with all of you this session to promote policies that address hunger in our communities and aim to improve the lives of Oregonians. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you. Mr. and Mrs. Unger.
Thanks for listening. I have never done this before, so bear with me. Matt and I have a 140-acre farm out in Cornelius, Oregon, and we've been...
Can you start by saying your name for the record?
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sorry. Kathy Unger, and this is my husband, Matt. He is up here. He didn't want to speak, but anyway, we have a 140-acre farm, and we are here testifying in support of Senate Bill 700. We grow berries, and we sell them locally. All our fruit goes locally to farmers markets and New Seasons, grocery stores, roadside stands. We also have a farm stand. Senate Bill 700 has made a huge impact on our farm. We've been able to hire more employees because of dollars spent at the markets. Also, production has gone up because of it, which is great for us. On the other side of that, at the farmers markets, we love selling locally because we get to share what we do and teach people what we do. And we see that a lot with the customers that bring the coupons to the market. We get to teach them about growing. We get to introduce them to new foods they maybe didn't have before. We've even had families come out to the farm to U-Pick that had never done that before, and they can do that now with those coupons, bring them right out to the farm, U-Pick, take that product home with them or the produce and enjoy it. The farmers markets are a great outlet. This has just been, I can't tell you how many times I've had customers with these coupons come to the market for the first time, bring their kids. Their kids are watching chef demonstrations with food that they had never had before, or they're buying berries, so excited to have this pint of berries. But then we see them come back. There's just a lot of customers that we've had come back time and time again after their coupons are done and gone. So any way to expand this program is great, and we've heard that from customers a lot. How do we get more of these coupons? And we're out of them. What do we do now? And so I have a story really quickly about a customer of mine, and this just shows you kind of the clientele that we've been teaching and sharing and with. The lady back in 2001 at the Hillsboro Farmers Market, her name is Mary, and she brought her coupons to me and said, "I got these in the mail and I don't know what to do with them." She's a senior citizen. So I walked her through it, gave her her pint of berries, let her know she could walk around and spend those dollars at other vendors. She didn't have to do it all right with me. And she came back the next week so excited to have taken home all that produce. And she said it was some of the best tasting produce she'd ever had. She didn't have any more coupons. She spent them all. She shared some of that produce with her family. But she came back every single week after that, all summer long, and bought produce not just from us but from other vendors. And we saw her for probably 5 or 6 years in a row after that. And she had never been to the market when she brought those coupons. But she was told to take them to the farmers markets and you can get produce. She didn't know what the farmers market was, but she did. And we see that a lot. We've done, in 2014, our farm did about $13,000 in WIC. Farm Direct Nutrition Program coupons. It's increased every year since we've started participating in this program. And so any more funding, our sales at most of the farmers markets we did were stagnant last year, but our Farm Direct Nutrition Program coupons were on the rise. So we had an increase in those, and our other sales were stagnant. I really appreciate you guys listening to us, and we really support this program. It's just a great opportunity for people to come to the market and learn about farming and what we do and what there is out there besides, you know, what they can get at the grocery store. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? Senator Olson?
Well, we want to wait for the – I was going to ask Callie, but We had another bill here prior when I was chair again, you weren't here, on the decisions between a processed and an unprocessed food. And our consideration is the fact that if it's pulled out of the ground and washed, put into a basket, then it could be processed. And this bill says unprocessed, so we're just wondering maybe if you would take that back to your boss and say, you know, maybe we could look at that, because there's really not a definition of processed food.
Sure.
Maybe just eliminate it?
Yeah, sure. And I'm sure that when Patty comes up to speak, she could probably speak to that
as
well.
And then when you also ask her, would you ask her about my bill that I'm trying to get lower?
Only
kidding. Thank you very much.
Any other questions for this panel?
No. Thank you very much for coming.
Yeah, thanks
for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next panel is going to be Patty Whitney Wise, Rebecca Landis, and Ryan Fisher. Oh, I was just bringing you up. So I was trying to keep all the people from Marion County together, but I can.
Okay.
They weren't divided
up
in panels.
Okay, we would like for them to be able
sure,
to
Sure, that sounds good. So Patty Whitney Wise, Irene Hamilton, Donnell. So are you coming, Patty?
And Reagan.
Donnell Sullivan and Reagan.
Do we need to move a chair out of the way?
Welcome.
And I would like for them to speak first, please, okay. And then I'll round it up. So would you like to go first? You want? Go ahead. Sorry. Reagan, go ahead. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Does
that help? So do I say my name? It's Reagan Parker. So I live here in Salem. I'll just go ahead and read this. So WIC program has helped my family through a lot of tight years. We started receiving WIC just after, it was 6.5 years ago. It was shortly after our second child was born, and we continued to stay with the program till our fourth child was born, and my husband finally finished law school here at Willamette. So it was a great blessing for us to be able to have that support to our family through those years that were rather tight. So just a little background. So I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I have four children. Prior to the birth of our second son, my husband had a great job. He worked for the state. We had steady income, excellent benefits, and we were doing good. And then he decided to go back to school. He went on part-time income, and finances got a little stressful because we had a family and school to pay for. So we didn't qualify for things like food stamps, but and we did qualify for WIC, and that was a great blessing for us. So around the time my husband started school, a family friend of ours introduced us to the WIC program, and I didn't realize how expensive it was to eat healthy and to feed my family healthy meals. And WIC has been able to fill that gap for us. It was comforting to know, too, that no matter what our income situation was, we were going to be able to feed our children a healthy meal. So I'm grateful for the service that has been provided for us. And one of the things I really did enjoy about the WIC program was this farmers market vouchers. My kids always got really excited when the vouchers came out in the summer. I really appreciated that it was locally grown, that it was a lot of choices. Like, you go to those farmers markets, there's all sorts of things that you don't get at the regular grocery store. And then it was also nice to have just an increase in the amount of fruits and vegetables that we were able to eat. And it was fun for our kids. It was a fun outing to take them on to go go to the farmers market on the weekend. With a growing family, the regular fruits and veggies go fast. So having that extra amount of food was greatly appreciated. My boys really enjoyed talking to the farmers, and like the Ungers said earlier, we were those families. We were, you know, they thought it was great to learn what the farmers did and how they did the farming and what the different tools were used for. And there was one time we were out on the farm, and I have a rather precocious son, and he was not afraid to talk to you know, anyone and ask them questions. And he saw a big machine with these two big brushes, looked like a car wash, and he thought, what is that for? So he marched right over him and asked the farmer what it was for, and it was for berry picking. I did not even know they had machines that did that. It was great just to learn and to talk to those people. Another great thing about the program was that it gave us an opportunity to try those different kinds of foods that we never had used before. The kids liked going and trying the new things. There was often little samples of different things that they never tried before, and it gave them a good opportunity to try new things. And if you have kids, you know how hard it is to get them to try new things. So it was really great opportunity there. It was also fun for them to pick out things that they've never tried before and bring home. And I had the challenge of learning how to cook new things. And although some of them weren't necessarily a big hit with everybody, it was a good learning experience for them. And I also liked the U-Pick that they talked about, where we could go out And, you know, it's not necessarily really hard work, but for a little four-year-old, it's hard work, and it was a good teaching experience for them to go out and do a little work and bring home the fruit for themselves. One of the other things I wanted to just say that I was very impressed with a lot of the farms that we went to and a lot of the farmers that we spoke to. And even though we're not on the program anymore, we still shop there. We still go out to those same farms. We still have a relationship with a lot of those farmers, and they're good people, and it has broadened our horizons. We were able to learn new things, try new things, meet new people, and we still go to those same farmers markets, and we still go to those same farm stands, and I feel like our family's learned a lot from this program, and I feel like we eat more local produce, we eat more things, more different kinds of vegetables and fruits that we didn't eat before, and we're eating more of them locally and supporting local businesses and local farms, and I really appreciate how this program has introduced that to us. So, and I know I'm not the only one that this has helped. There's many, many families that feel the same way. So that's all.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Donnell Sullivan. I am the Vice President of Charm Touches, a family-owned business. I am here to speak on behalf of my mother, Irene Hamilton, who receives the Farm Direct vouchers for seniors. I have a little thing she would like me to read. She said, "Hello, I am here to speak about the Farm Direct vouchers for seniors that I have received. With these vouchers, I am able to buy a local fresh fruits and produce at peak times and lower prices. I eat some of the produce during the summer, but most of it is canned or frozen by my daughter so that I have some produce during the winter when the prices are higher, as I can't garden much on my own anymore. When I first got these vouchers, it was in the mid-30s. Now it is less than $20. Having larger voucher amounts would be beneficial to me and others like me who live on limited amount of income to have more during the year." I would like to add some more on that. When she first got the vouchers, I was living with her and raising 4 children. The vouchers helped with the house, or with the food coming into the house, and it also enabled my girls to find more stuff than just the stuff you threw in the microwave from the stores. And since then, my girls have grown and have families of their own, and they still go to the farmers markets and go get fresh produce and stuff to cook for their families. So, thank you. Thank you, chairs, and everybody else. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Gelzer and members of the committee. Patty Whitney Wise from Partners for Hunger Free Oregon. As you can see, these programs have been very important for families. We realized that inadvertently we had not submitted to you an amendment to the bill. So hopefully you will hold it over so we have a chance to turn that in. Senator Rosenbaum's office will do that. This bill not only adds money to the Senior Farm Direct and the WIC Farm Direct, and you've heard all the great benefits for those, it sets aside $200,000 for a work group to determine if there is a way we can double that money with match at farmers markets for the SNAP program. There is a grant that was just given to Oregon through the Portland Farmers Market Fund, and that will help in 46 markets throughout the state, but there are still a number of rural areas that do not have access to that kind of SNAP match money. So our recommendation in the amendment is to put $200,000 in the e-board for this group to come back with a proposal. Once we've worked with USDA, we believe there's a couple of different avenues where we might be able to use the money to double it with a grant from USDA nationally. And that was a request from a number of people we worked with on this bill. So both the additions to WIC and Senior Farm Direct bring the level back up to where it was in 2013. There was a little bit of money in the end of session bill, and that wasn't rolled into the budget. So the $200,000 for seniors and $100,000 for WIC bring us back up to where we were, and this other $200,000 then will hopefully get doubled so we can serve more fresh fruits and vegetables to people in farmers markets. And I might just add on the processed issue, almost everything in farmers markets and roadside stands is considered unprocessed. So you can wash it and it's still unprocessed. So I don't think we need to remove it. It actually lines up with the federal language. So we would like to keep it in if that's okay fine. With you. Thanks. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
And last up, we have Rebecca Landis and Ryan Fisher.
My name for the record is Rebecca Landis. I am the market director for Corvallis Albany Farmers Markets, and today I'm coming to you as the immediate past president of the Oregon Farmers Markets Association. And I had to verify Laura Wendell here in the back is the current president, so I am still the immediate past president. Excuse me, I've been having allergies for about 2 months now. Wow, it's quite a year. Okay, I am also, I remain active with the Oregon Farmers Markets Association, advising on various policy issues, and this one is close to my heart. I have had the privilege of managing farmers markets since 1995, and that's right before Oregon began offering coupons, they're now vouchers, for the Women, Infants, and Children program to be spent in farmers markets. A few years later, we added the senior component, and then the Farm Direct Nutrition program was extended to farm stands, and it is very popular at farm stands, as you've heard. I'm here to support the proposed appropriations for both parts of FDNP, that's the WIC and the senior, as well as the potential emergency board set aside that would get more fruits and vegetables on plates in food insecure households by funding some form of incentives for using SNAP. I am doing that now in the Corvallis and the Albany farmers markets, and we learned this week that we are funded through the FINI or FINIP program that you just heard Patty refer to. The Farmers Market Fund is a separate but related nonprofit to the Portland Farmers Market Group. And I was able to get my markets plus the Sweet Home, Lebanon, and Corvallis Indoor Farmers Markets into that group of 46. So that was some very good news for us. That's $500,000 we're talking about. While I do spend a lot of energy on SNAP and farmers markets, it's really worth taking some time to stop and appreciate the special qualities of these WIC and senior FDNP. They're modestly sized. They educate while they feed, and I think we had that illustrated here, so I don't really need to explain that. They focus strictly on fresh fruits and vegetables, and actually we allow fresh herbs here in Oregon, and that's a federal allowance that our program took up at my request many years ago. And they are aimed directly at farm direct marketers who spend that income that they receive right in their communities. We see multi-generational groups. You saw that today in the prior panel. And I know that that's true at the farm stands as well. Without these funds, there are families that may never be introduced to the very basic things that I take for granted in my diet, really fresh, locally grown fruits and vegetables. And I want to stop and say it does prevent food waste. It helps children like fruits and vegetables because if you give them, let's say, an apple that's tasteless, they develop the sense that an apple is something to throw into the compost at best. If you give them a very tasty piece of fruit, they develop a good attitude toward eating fruits and vegetables, and they will continue to incorporate more of those in their diet as they grow up. As you heard in the prior panel, some people spend their vouchers all at one time. Some people preserve them. Both are good strategies. I'm always thrilled to see kids learning how to manage the food budget, how to cook. Somebody else, I think, mentioned cooking demonstrations. That's something we have at farmers markets that the WIC and senior clients, mostly the WIC clients, I suppose, are. I would think that the senior clients can teach us a thing or two about cooking with fresh foods. When I get calls from people seeking how to asking me where and how to use their FDNP vouchers, I use that opportunity to let them know that they can use their Oregon Trail card at farmers markets. And as you know, the eligibility is not identical, but there's some overlap there. And I want to do kind of a shout out the agencies that do the work that makes this happen. The Agriculture Department and the WIC program work together, and they do this very seamlessly. The senior is folded into that, and everyone gets what they need, and it works very well on not very much money. And so got to wrap it up here now. I want to underline that this is a triple win for everyone when we have FDNP, because we have the clients who are benefiting from both the actual money that they have and the nutrition education they get through WIC. And these dollars are pretty much the fastest and quickest stimulus that you guys have in your legislative toolkit, because it goes straight back into the communities. So we're helping the vulnerable populations, the farmers, and the communities where the farmers spend their earnings. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate the opportunity to support SB 700.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. My name is Ryan Fisher. I'm here today on behalf of Oregon Health and Sciences University. Very happy to be able to support Senate Bill 700. I've had the pleasure over the past year of being able to understand the work that is going on at a particular part of OHSU. Of course, lots of great research happening at the institution. But one area is the Moore Institute for Nutritional Health. And the Moore Institute was founded on a partnership with a contribution from Bob Moore, who began Bob's Red Mill, and its focus is to reduce the prevalence of chronic diseases. And it's the cornerstone of the science behind this is a new field of science called the developmental origins of health and disease. There is a researcher named Dr. Kent Thornburg, who I would very much like to bring down and let him talk in front of this committee. He knows far more about this than myself, and so I will be very brief today. But essentially, what this research is showing is that even more than we had previously anticipated, the importance of good nutrition in prenatal, natal, and early childhood is extremely important, not only in the health of the mother, but in the long-term health of the child, and helping them be more resilient against many chronic diseases. The goal of the Moore Institute is to extend a far-reaching and long-lasting impact on the health. And they look to do this by addressing the complex clinical and social factors related to and arising from poor nutrition. I will say one piece that I've had the chance of watching Dr. Thornburg present a few times, and each time I find it fascinating. But one of the things that he said is, calories are cheap, nutrition is expensive. And if you think about that, you know, I can pull into a fast food drive-through, and with the change that I can find on the bottom of my car, because it's quite messy, be full after driving through that drive-through. And I've gotten calories, but I haven't gotten nutrition. And what these programs do is they provide nutrition, and it's extremely important. So I hope that Dr. Thornburg has the opportunity later this session to come and tell you more about that. But I'll end my comments there, and thank you very much for the time.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thanks for we should note that that this institution also hosts the farmers market.
At the institution, at OHSU?
There is a farmers market at OHSU, and it's been very successful. Students, employees have been able to get fresh fruits and vegetables and take them home. And I actually was not aware that they were the ones who hosted it, but I have been to the farmers market. It's great up there.
Can patients and families go and
It's open to the public. Anybody can.
Yeah. The manager is Nicole Copen, who's a dietitian, and she did a panel at the Small Farm Conference that was very well received on prescription produce. So that's maybe we'll come talk to you about that someday.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you both very much. Thank you, everyone. That's everybody that we have on our list. The amendment just came through, so we'll get that posted up on OLIS so that people can see it. And as soon as we have the paperwork ready, are people comfortable posting that for a work session? And
sure.
Moving forward? Great.
Since we're on and you're not.
What?
And we're on the bill and you're not.
My last committee, I was criticized for being on too many bills. I can't win. Can never win. All right. I am on this bill. I'm on the bill. I'm on the printed bill.
Not happen until it's in the print.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 700. Thank you, everybody, for a great committee, and we're adjourned.
Have a good trip.
Lucky Sevens hearing, and off to Las Vegas I go.
Good trip.
Lucky Sevens hearing.